time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. U.S. National Security Advisor Michael Flynn resigns. Flynn acknowledged late Monday that he had, in his words, inadvertently briefed Vice President Mike Pence and others with what he called incomplete information. That information regarded phone conversations he had with the Russian ambassador in the weeks before President Trump took office. U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan told reporters the president did the right thing to ask for Flynn's resignation.
And I think the president made the right decision to ask for his resignation. You cannot have a national security advisor misleading the vice president and others.
Opposition Democrats on Capitol Hill quickly criticized the handling of the matter. Here's Representative Adam Schiff.
Resignation of Michael Flynn was brought about not by discovering the falsehood, but by the fact that the falsehood became public. And that ought to be deeply disturbing to everyone.
A congressional investigation is very likely. The president named retired Army General Keith Kellogg as his acting national security advisor. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said Tuesday a meeting of the alliance's defense ministers will focus on the need of members to increase the amount of money they spend on defense. He told reporters in Brussels countries boosted their defense spending by $10 billion last year. But that was only five, but only five out of 28 members are meeting their targets.
So we will, at our meeting, stress the importance of fair burden sharing and higher defense spending for the alliance.
U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is in Brussels to take part in the talks. U.S. Federal Judge Robert Robart says the case challenging President Trump's temporary travel ban from seven countries will move forward. The Justice Department asked him to put it on hold. This is VOA News. People living near the Oroville Dam in Northern California are allowed to go back to their homes. Erosion on the dam spillway and the threat of floods caused officials to issue an evacuation order Monday. Butte County Sheriff Corey Honea issued an evacuation warning and asked residents to keep an eye on conditions as they develop.
Taking into account the current level of risk, the predicted strength of the next round of inclement weather, and the capacity of the lake to accommodate increased inflow associated with those storms, we have concluded that it is safe to reduce the immediate evacuation order currently in place to an evacuation warning. This allows evacuated residents to return to their homes and for businesses in the area to resume operations.
The head of California's water agency says repairs to the spillway will cost between $100 and $200 million. The New York Times newspaper reports Russia has secretly deployed a ground-launched cruise missile that may be in violation of the 1987 U.S.-Russia Arms Control Treaty. The State Department would not directly comment on the report, but indicated concern over violations of another arms treaty. The U.S. Office of Government Ethics has released a letter saying the White House should investigate the public endorsement given by presidential advisor Kellyanne Conway to products produced by the president's daughter. Conway made the endorsement after a major retail store announced it was pulling Ivanka Trump's clothing line from its shelves. The endorsement by the high official is seen as a violation of government standards of conduct. The U.S. Senate voted Tuesday to confirm former wrestling executive Linda McMahon to head the Small Business Administration. The 81-19 vote was a rare show of bipartisanship on Capitol Hill. Turkish security forces said Tuesday they arrested a French citizen of Turkish origin who was allegedly one of the planners of the New Year's Eve nightclub bombing in Istanbul. Prosecutors identified the 22-year-old man with the initials AS. President Trump Tuesday signed legislation rescinding a rule requiring oil and gas companies to disclose payments to the U.S. or foreign governments for commercial development. The rule was contained in the Dodd-Frank Financial Oversight Law, and supporters of the move say canceling the regulation will create jobs. The head of the U.S. Central Bank says the economy is improving enough to consider raising interest rates during the next few months. U.S. Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen told a congressional committee Tuesday that she expects the economy to continue in its modest expansion. The United States has designated Venezuela's vice president as an international narcotics trafficker, that coming under the U.S. Kingpin Act. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone announces dates for the country's general elections.
Today, I have again instructed my office to put forth a public notice announcing that parliamentary and local council elections will be held a little over a year from now on March 7th, 2018.
The Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. More than 100 people are killed in clashes between the DRC army and a local militia. The FAO holds a meeting on armed worm outbreak in southern Africa, and South Sudan reacts to a confidential UN report warning about the rise of militias under the loose command of the SPLA and the rebels.
First of all, I don't understand what the reports mean by militias that are out of control. What I do know is the fact that there are a number of rebels that are actually determined to fight the government through killing civilians indiscriminately.
Atain Wek Atain is the spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir, and Valentine's Day celebration knows no ethnic difference in Burundi. Those stories, plus our Black History Month facts and contest, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone has become the latest African country to announce it will hold elections next year. President Ernest Bai Koroma says all four elections will take place in a single day in 2018. From Freetown, reporter Kelvin Lewis has the details.
In a nationwide broadcast, President Ernest Bai Koroma announced the dates for the coming elections.
Fellow Sierra Leoneans, on the 10th November 2011, I caused my office to announce the dates for the 2012 local council and parliamentary elections. It was a little over a year to those elections. Today, as envisioned by our constitution and in line with established practice, I have again instructed my office to put forth a public notice announcing that parliamentary and local council elections will be held a little over a year from now on March 7th, 2018. Having consulted with me, the National Electoral Commission will also announce that the presidential election shall take place on the same date.
There had been some controversy over the announcement of the election's dates. President Koroma has served his two terms in office and is not eligible to stand again. But opposition parties had accused him of wanting to prolong his stay in office, and they say that was why he had refused to announce the dates. The president himself had used the public forum to respond, saying he will go by what the constitution says. The Elections Monitors Group National Elections Watch, or NEW, had issued a press release calling on the National Electoral Commission to announce the elections dates. This was followed by an ultimatum issued by the leader of the Alliance Democratic Party, Mohamed Kamarimba Mansare, who said that if the elections body does not announce a date before the 23rd of February, he would lead a demonstration to their office. Despite the announcement, politicians are still arguing whether the dates announced fall within the constitutional limits. For his part, President Koroma has gone on to warn citizens, saying they must conduct themselves within the law.
Fellow Sierra Leoneans, announcement of the dates for elections is not an announcement for the start of the campaign period. The commencement of the campaign period will be announced by NEC. When that time comes, we expect every party and every individual to follow the rules and regulations set forth by the appropriate authorities. Political activity is no excuse for breaking the law. My government is determined to ensure peaceful and orderly elections, and anyone caught disturbing the peace or violating the laws in the name of campaigning or other political activities will meet the full force of the law.
With the election 1 year and 21 days to go, President Koroma now has barely 386 days left in office. For VOA Africa, I'm Kelvin Lewis reporting from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
The South Sudan government says its military continues to be professional in accordance with the rules of engagement as it fights to protect the country against rebels who it says are killing civilians indiscriminately. This comes as the French news agency, citing a confidential UN report, says the war in South Sudan has reached catastrophic proportions for civilians. The report said the rise of militias under the loose command of the SPLA or the rebel commanders is spreading the fragmentation and dislocation of the country. Atain Wek Atain, spokesman for President Salva Kiir, says South Sudan has no uncontrollable militias and that the use of such language is demeaning to the country's Liberation Army.
First of all, I don't understand what the reports mean by militias that are out of control. What I do know is the fact that there are a number of rebels that are actually determined to fight the government through killing civilians indiscriminately. There are no militias that should be out of control. We have the army, which is national army, and we have those on the forest who are actually killing the civilian. But the army is doing its best to ensure that it protects the civilian. Whatever is meant by the militia that are out of control, I don't understand. You know, this is a language which is completely disparaging and is even demeaning the sovereignty of the country.
It says that the rise of militias under the loose command of the SPLA, that's the National Army. So this is assuming that there's some militias or some aspects of your army that is loose, that is carrying out some violence.
Well, it's complete rubbish. It's complete rubbish in the fact that the SPLA is doing its best as an army of the nation, like any army in all the other nations. But because certain sectors of international community have started to disrespect the people of South Sudan and disrespect the sovereignty of the Republic of South Sudan, they would want to use the name militia to describe the army that has liberated this country. The same army that liberated South Sudan is the same army which is still in operation. By calling them a militia is a disparaging, and I would want those who have written this report to withdraw the word militia.
What is your government doing to stop the fighting that is going on in South Sudan?
The government has given clearly the indication that without implementing the peace agreement or the solution of conflict in the Republic of South Sudan, South Sudan will be in a constant war. We saw the agreement as a material that would actually return the country to normalcy. Therefore, we decided, you know, faithfully to implement it, the peace agreement. The situation has improved, you know, significantly, but our country has been betrayed by the fact that there are people who write such reports, you know, so that they scare off those who would be actually helping the government of South Sudan to conclude the peaceful conclusion to the problem.
What do you have to say, for example, to what some people are saying is a continued harassment of activists or critics of the government, yet at the same time, your government is talking about national dialogue?
I don't understand what they would actually mean about harassment of activists, if at all there is anything of such kind. But to be honest with you, South Sudan remains as one of the countries in which freedom of expression has been allowed. And those who call themselves activists, you know, might have been rampant in the way they criticize the government of South Sudan, even when they are inside the government control area.
The UN Secretary General is asking the Security Council to act so that political talks will be revived. The last time I was speaking to someone in your government, someone told me that the international community says that Riek Machar, if he ever want to come back, he should come back during the election. Is that the view of your government? And if that is true, how can fighting stop? And how can any talks take place? How can any dialogue take place?
Concerning those who say that Riek Machar should come back to South Sudan in 2018 to run the election, they are missing some points. One fundamental point is that Riek Machar can only return to South Sudan when he renounces violence. If he has not renounced violence, then he cannot come to South Sudan, just only to run the election. We cannot put our citizens in a limbo again by allowing such a warlord, you know, to come back to South Sudan to run for political post of any kind, just to return to violence when he loses the election. Because I don't think the people of South Sudan have the stomach of voting for Riek Machar in any post as a political leader in the country.
Ateng Wek Ateng is the spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Today is Wednesday, February 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The UN Human Rights Office says more than 100 people have been killed over the past few days in clashes between the army and a local militia in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Kasai Central Province. The fighting took place between February 9th and 13th in the territory of Dibaya. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Tensions in the area of persistent conflict have been growing since April, with the emerging friction between the customary tribal chief and authorities. The situation reached a fever pitch in August when the chief was killed by Congolese armed forces. UN human rights spokeswoman Liz Throssell tells VOA that since then, the local militia has become radicalized, attacking institutions viewed as symbols of the state.
A lot of the people fighting with the militia, they are children. They have been recruited by the militia leaders, and that is something that we strongly condemn. I can't say exactly who the victims were, but we're given to understand that the majority of the people who've been killed were militia members.
Throssell says the armed forces reportedly opened fire indiscriminately with machine guns last week when they saw the militia fighters, who were armed mainly with machetes and spears.
One of the incidents did take place on the 9th of February, when we understand there was an incident in a market. And that may account for the fact that about 39 women were killed, that they were caught in the fire.
The UN Human Rights Office says it is deeply concerned about the high number of deaths, adding it suggests an excessive and disproportionate use of force by the soldiers. The agency is urging restraint to minimize damage and injury. The agency says it has documented atrocities committed by both sides since August. It is calling for an independent investigation into human rights violations and abuses committed by the Congolese army and militia in the ongoing conflict. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization is holding an emergency regional meeting in Zimbabwe on the spread of armyworm worms in southern Africa, which is already struggling with food shortages. The pests are destroying crops in Malawi, Zimbabwe, and Zambia. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization organizes an emergency regional meeting in Zimbabwe on the spread of the four armyworm in southern Africa, which threatens to worsen the region's food insecurity. FAO coordinator for Southern Africa, Chimimba David Piri, said the meeting is aimed at finding a strategy to contain the situation.
Many countries are affected. It is also the countries that are going to offer solutions of a coordinated approach to control this. That now that we have this new pest here, the four armyworm, we cannot eradicate it. In the Americas, it has been there since 1957, and they have not managed to control it because it keeps changing, it keeps evolving. So we cannot expect that it can be eradicated. But we have to find a plan for managing it from now onwards.
Experts suspect that four armyworm might have come when the Southern African region imported maize from the Americas during El Nino-induced drought in the 2015-2016 rain season. The three-day meeting in Harare is also grappling with other plant pests such as the South American tomato leaf miner that has been found in Angola, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, South Africa, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The bug has caused extensive damage, according to International Red Locust Control Organization for Central and Southern Africa Director Moses Okoba. He says the East Africa region is also on high alert amid the spread of H5N1, a highly pathogenic avian influenza in 12 West and Central African countries, and H5N8 in wild and domestic birds along the shores of Lake Victoria in Uganda. He says resources are being stretched.
So we need to very quickly think about how best and how quickly we are going to look at the region as a whole, not only in the outbreak areas, but also those states that are protected by the activities that are undertaken within the frontline states. So generally, I would say that whatever we are proposed in terms of protection is crucial to ensuring that food is secure in the region. Otherwise, we'll end up with a disaster.
The FAO says more than 40 million people need food assistance in Southern Africa before the next harvest season that starts in March, with Zimbabwe and Madagascar being some of the worst hit by El Nino-induced drought. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Burundians came together to show how united the ethnic groups are on Valentine's Day. Intermarriages between different ethnic groups in the country are thriving. Moses Havyarimana has the story from Bujumbura.
In Burundi, there are three ethnic groups, with Hutu being the largest in the country, representing approximately 80% of the population, and 19% of the estimated 10 million people are from the Tutsi ethnic group. This Valentine's Day was celebrated as a day of love for all Burundians, most especially those who are married to their beloved ones from the different ethnic background. I met a woman in Bujumbura who didn't prefer to disclose her name. She expresses her feelings for her husband after being married for more than 23 years and now having 7 children. She says that she felt more love for the husband, and despite of her school criticizing people coming from the part of the country her husband is coming from, he loved him and that they got married. So until today, they are living in a very happy life. Burundi underwent 2 genocides committed by both Tutsi and the Hutu ethnic groups since the early 70s. The political violence that erupted in 2015 after the incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza bid for a controversial term in the office was feared that could revive the ethnic tensions in the country. Intermarriage between Hutu and Tutsi is becoming a common practice in Burundi. Jean-Pierre married a Tutsi wife.
In our country, it is normal to have a wife from another ethnic group. It's normal. It's okay. We are the different ethnics, and we are married. We are having a good life together. We don't have any problem. We don't have any. Our relationship between me and my wife is good at all. Right now, it's about 8 years we are together.
An event for the first time of a kind in Burundi was conducted on Valentine's Day, for the lovers publicly telling their stories, especially those who are married from the different ethnic group. Mediatrice Baringayabo is the organizer of the event.
My idea of organizing this was to look into the love that existed even before colonial system, to see how can that love be embedded in today's ways of love and find the best way to help our Burundian society to lean on love in order to build a strong community.
As intermarriage in Burundi is becoming a common practice, Burundians believe this could be a way to reconcile the two ethnic groups that were once hostile to each other. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Civil society groups in Guinea-Bissau are planning protests next week to call on President José Mário Vaz to step down. A spokesperson for the local group Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens, Carlos de Silva, talks to Ricky Strike about how they think Vaz's inability to honor commitments of the Conakry agreements and put together a stable government is causing a crisis in the country.
Our movement, we are the voice of civil society movement. We are fighting for democracy and a state based on the rule of law. They are, for the moment, 7 other civil movements joining our organization.
What is your problem with the current government in Bissau at the moment?
No, the problem is, for the moment, we have 5 different governments just in 2 years. And in our country, we have what we call semi-presidential system, which means that the party who have the majority of deputies, they are the one who take the government. But what's going on for the moment? José Mário Vaz is not one to follow the democracy rule, and he put down the government who won the election, and he chose someone that is not a part of the party. And he has not been respecting the rules of democracy in the country. Even the agreements, including collateral agreement, is an agreement that say that, okay, this is agreement you have to sign, and different company are having a problem. Therefore, we are preparing against the president, demanding him to step down, as he cannot solve the problem.
What are you guys preparing to do against the government? Are you guys going to march? Are you going to protest?
Yeah, we're going to protest against the president, demanding him to step down, as he cannot solve the problem. As I say, as he's not being respecting democracy rules, no other agreement, including Connect Agreement, to help the country come out of this ongoing crisis. And we are joining, we are trying to contact all different movements, civil movements, to join our protest.
That was Carlos De Silva, a spokesperson for the local group Movement of Conscious Nonconformist Citizens. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bissau.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 15th. On this day in 1968, Henry Louis became the first African-American to lead a symphony orchestra in the United States, the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra. He began studying piano at the age of 5 and later learned to play the clarinet as well as several string instruments. Also on this day in 1804, the New Jersey legislature approved a law calling for gradual emancipation for African Americans. By doing so, New Jersey became the last northern state in the U.S. to outlaw slavery. And during this Black History Month, we want to tell you about Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American Supreme Court Justice. Before that, he was legal director of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP. Thurgood Marshall won a famous case, Brown versus the Board of Education, which desegregated public schools in the United States. Marshall died on January 24, 1993, at the age of 84. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court has one Black Associate Justice, Clarence Thomas. Did you know that John Brown was a radical white abolitionist who is famous for his participation in an anti-slavery warfare in the United States for his 1859 raid on the Federal Armory in Harpers Ferry, Virginia? Brown hoped that the attack on the armory would rouse the local slaves to rise up and claim their freedom, but his plan did not completely materialize, and Brown was captured, tried in Charleston, Virginia, and sentenced to be hanged for inciting slave rebellion. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 15th. Congratulations to Angus Stephen Wara of Bamenda in Northwest Region of Cameroon, James K. Sibley of Suakoko, Bong County, Liberia, and Chinedu Ona of Wuse Zone 7 in Abuja, Nigeria. You are the winners of our February 14th question. Which African-American medical doctor discovered a system to store blood plasma? The answer, Dr. Charles Richard Drew. Now, here is our question for today, February 15th. Who is the first African-American to win the Miss America pageant? Once again, who is the first African-American to win the Miss American pageant? Send your answers to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And that's it for this Wednesday, February 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.